administrator. Thank you. Okay, hi everybody. My name is Deb, and I am an alcoholic and an addict of various sorts.
Hi, Deb.
The fact that I'm sitting here tells you I've done the work. So, you know, we're going to talk about step two, part one today. And let's start off with just basics. Definitionally, and looking at the words themselves, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. In that word, the first thing is the title of our topic is We Agnostics. And I always like to start off with the definition of agnostics because many of us had misconceptions. This whole chapter is about the misconceptions that we have carried with us and that have been barriers. And basically, you know, any definition will do, but the one that I found today is a person who believes that nothing is known or can be known of the existence or nature of God or of anything beyond material phenomenon. A person who claims neither faith nor disbelief in God. So I like that first part better, that concept of nothing is known, nothing can be known. And I think, quite frankly, as an intelligent human being who got stuck in a way of thinking, that's frequently the way I felt and thought before I started working on the program. It didn't help me that I had been raised in a family that had a religious background and had a faith background and that I'd had a faith life. What matters in this chapter is the personal quality of that belief. And in reality, I think the chapter is also about hope, which is the principle that underlines it. If anybody comes into this, there are many times in the book where it talks about the fact that when people came first to AA and thought they had the solution, but then found out that there was this spiritual component, which most people heard as it's a God thing, and that would be a barrier for many people for many reasons. But if you can get beyond that part of it, that hope, the hope that we will be restored to sanity, that's the first inkling because up until that point, first step is simply we have admitted that we were alcoholics and our lives had become unmanageable. So that first step leaves us in a place of, and quite honestly, that's where this chapter begins. It basically is now saying, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. So that previous chapter that we read last week was about generalities. This is what some of the people do who are addicts and who are alcoholics. This is how they behave. These are the kinds of situations they get into. And here in step two, part one, we're basically asked, we're basically given two questions, and this is where it becomes personal. That first question is, am I an alcoholic? And one of the things that I have come to understand is whenever there's a question mark, you got to stop. You got to stop and you got to answer. So this first paragraph is about, if that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. And the previous chapter went through examples of that. So it's setting it up for the fact, well, all right, if you acknowledge that you have trouble stopping drinking or that you have trouble not drinking or using whatever your item is, you might be one of us. And so that acknowledgement, which can be freeing, is also a very heavy burden until you find out that there is this possible solution. The second question that gets answered in this question that is very hard is, am I willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself? So those are the two key questions that structure this step, I think. Am I willing to step up to the line and go, I am an alcoholic, or I am an addict, or I am a compulsive overeater, any of the above, and to believe that in a way that I'm then willing to look at this spiritual solution, because it has been outlined in that last chapter that only that spiritual solution is going to solve the problem in many cases. So, you know, when we look at the way this happens, I think my experience has been that I grew up with a strong church experience, a strong faith experience, but I think as many of us come to understand in recovery is what we didn't have was we had a corporate experience of God through religion, many of us, but we did not have a personal experience with a spiritual power. And we, many of us, I know me included, I did not think anything was stronger than I was. I had an example yesterday where I had somebody say something to me. It was like, oh, you mean I don't have to be concerned about that? God will take care of that situation. And I once again had to remember that my boundaries are simple. I need to take care of myself. I need to believe that there is a system that will take care of it. But I'm not in charge. And there is a power greater than myself. Many people will say when they first come to this to recovery programs, the main thing you need to understand is that you are not God. And that you are not that greater power. And that you need that greater power. You know, I've heard many people say you can pick anything to be your higher power, but I heard a very funny speaker once who talked about, well, if you pick the doorknob, it gets kind of tricky when you start praying to the, you know, to the rock. If, let's say you say that, you know, the God is the rock or God is the doorknob. So you have to be careful about those things, but the reality, the point of that is that initially, and this chapter talks about that, initially, we only need a small beginning. Just a very small opening of that door, that little bit of opening that will allow us to move to a new place. And I think probably if, as we move on here, it talks about on page 45, it sets it up for what the rest of the chapter is going to be about. It's about lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. And then that one word sentences will always get you, obviously. You know, I can hear any adolescent going, duh. You know, it really is a matter of it's self-evident by this point. Once we've realized that we can't handle it, we need something else, and it's not us. We can't do that part of it. And then there is another question here, but where and how? And again, that it goes on in that next sentence to say it's the main object of this book to show you how to do that, how to find this personal conception and where you're going to find it. So you have both of these. And the key thing about this is its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will, and that's a positive one right there. That's a promise. It will solve your problem. Doesn't matter what your problem is. It will solve your problem once you are willing to accept that there's a power greater than yourselves. And so this is truly what this book is about. And in reality, what this is outlining here is that it's not about anything I could think. It's not about anything I can do. It's outlining the fact that I have to go to something outside of myself. And it can be the group for a while, and it can be other people for a while, but the reality is the one reliable source is going to be this power greater than ourselves that we are going to find. The answer to the where and the how is on page 55. So we know what it is, but the reality is here it is. If you look at 55:2, actually, we were fooling ourselves, and this is the where, deep down in every man, woman, and child, is the fundamental idea of God. And that's not something that probably people who have self-esteem problems or have been addicts and feel bad about what they've done, guilty, shame, all of those things, that's not something that's going to be easy for us to look at right to begin with. And it goes on to say, it may be obscured by calamity, pomp, or worship of other things, but in some form or other, it is there. So that concept right there, the where, it tells you it's going to be within ourselves. How many people, as young children, believe that that's where they're going to find it? I don't think many of us do. It's something we have to come to. And that concept of coming to, which is part of this step, really is about, it's about reviving, about returning to consciousness, about recovering. Those are all synonyms for that. So in the next paragraph, it says, how are we going to find it? And it tells you that it's going to be, sometimes we had to search fearlessly. And that's the part where we're finding the higher power, the God of our understanding, to fit our needs. Mine doesn't have to match yours. Yours doesn't have to match anybody else's. This is the process. It's about a search. And I think probably many of us would have said before we started BBSS that we might have been on a spiritual journey. We might have been searching for that something that we hadn't quite gotten in other places. but the ability to search fearlessly, to understand and to have that faith, that hope that we would find it. We found the great reality deep down within us. What an amazing thing. You know, if you go, if I think about the way that I learned about my concept of a creator as a child, it was very much, it was higher power and it was me. It was, he gives the rules and it was a him. And it was a white guy. And it wasn't somebody I could relate to. And it was all of these things that, you know, I now know. These were all parts of those barriers. But when I look at this, I could take all the he's out of here if I would. That's the one thing that bugs me in the literature, my complaint for the moment. But the reality is that essence, because I do believe it's everything. It's both male, it's both female, it's both animal, it's both spirit, it's both universe. It's within us. If I take it another step further, then I wonder if I'm within it. So there's that concept also, that mutuality, that we are totally interconnected. And the higher power is a part of that. And it doesn't matter what we call it. It matters that we relate to it. So if I go back again, you know, this is the how, this is the where and the how. And then we have to come back to basically the next part of the chapter. When you look at the beginning part of it, talks about all the things that probably stood in the way. Of us being able to find these things. And the rationale that, you know, well, reality, we've believed in other things. And we've believed in science, we've believed in electricity, we've believed in other things. And what this teaches me is that I need a different tool to find God. I can't use my reason to find God, my logic. And that was my great, to my mind, that was my great asset. As who I was before, I majored in science. I was a biologist. I became a geneticist. I used everything I understood about the world to, in quotes, justify my existence and my worth. But what I've discovered is that all of that intelligence, all of that logic, they don't work in finding a spiritual connection. That doesn't work. I can think about it, and quite frankly, that's what I was doing. Before I came into recovery, I tried every logical, rational approach to what is recovery about? How can I do it? What does it mean? And the reality was that it wasn't about logic. It was about spirituality and emotional content. It was about things that I had not been able to develop within myself before because they were, quite frankly, too scary and I wasn't allowed to. I grew up in a time when those were not things you talked about. And I was thinking about, one of the things I was thinking about in relation to this is I've often thought about it in terms of personal spiritual development over time, but I also thought about it this time in terms of the culture that we grew up in. I don't know about anybody else's ages here, but I was born in the early 50s, and I came of age, went off to college in 1970. So that during that time, you know, life went from a lot of rules and a lot of structure and a lot of expectations, not all of it good. And then all of a sudden, as I became a teenager and started moving into this more independent, everything blew up. Everything blew up. Religion was bad. The government was bad, at least in the neighborhood I lived in. You know, it was a matter of, you know, there was the Vietnam War, there was the civil rights movement, there were all these things going on that for my time when I grew up, it was, I no longer want to have anything to do with anything that's organized or handed to me and told how to do. And I got stuck there. I think I got stuck there. I really do. And it was only through working through some of the work in recovery that you can come back to go, that you are going to find a way to lay aside the prejudice. And that's the most important thing I found. When I look now in doing my writing and in thinking about things, what I had to come to understand was how prejudiced and intolerant I had become. And while I was criticizing that ugly tree in the forest of religion, I was forgetting, and I could hold them both in my hands. I could go, well, I know they do a lot of good things, but there's this one bad thing. And that was my biggest barrier. And for some of us, that may be the barrier, or it may be, but my parents didn't do this. Or it could be, but my job didn't allow me to do this. And we had all these excuses. And one of the interesting speakers I've listened to at some point along the way talked about perhaps the addiction was our way of saying we just wanted God to be closer to us. perhaps this is what it was about all along. And when we didn't get what we want because we were too sensitive, we were wired differently, we were self-seeking and selfish, when we didn't get all of that, well, we found that whatever our substance of choice was numbed it out, and we didn't feel that loneliness, that absence quite so much. Already, well, what do you know? So at any rate, once we are able to lay aside the prejudice, and again, that's a rational approach, but now you are basically going into that process, and this is the bridge into step three of, are we willing to believe in something, something bigger than ourselves? And I think that that willingness becomes something that will give us the energy to take on the next level. I like the fact the spiritual experience at the back of the book, to me, is really I think they wrote it. Because probably people say, well, I haven't had the white light experience. I haven't had the burning bush. I haven't had these things. And the point of that was to say, ah, but there are different ways of doing this. And some of us just learn a different way. It's like the concept of adult learners. We learn differently. Some of us learn by seeing something. Some of us learn by hearing it. Some of us learn by touching things and moving things around. The same thing is here is true. And all that is important is that willingness to be open. And that last statement, I think, is one of those quoted ones very much at the end of the spiritual experience. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery. Well, you know, hello. They kind of are the key to life, a happy life, if you look at it that way. We can recover if we do this. And there are promises in here that say that if we're willing to say this, a power greater than ourselves, we have the potential to recover. And that willingness, honest, and open-mindedness will allow us to move forward. And I think with that, I will stop.